Mike Bubala Show, 720 WGN. So I was talking about this a little bit last weekend when I was filling in for John Williams. Aside from all the news going on all the time here in our little world, we're always searching for habitable planets at other points in the universe. And lots of planets have been found, but now a planet was found not that far away, actually several planets, near a dwarf star. It's the first time we've really been looking at dwarf stars as possibilities for habitable planets, and it's a little bit easier to study them. Here to talk a little bit about that is Nick Pope. He is a retired official from the UK Ministry of Defense, and he is an all-around space-type guy. Hey, Nick, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for jumping on the phone with us. Tell me a little bit about your background, UK Ministry of Defense and space. How did those two correlate?
Well, I worked for the British government for 21 years at the Ministry of Defense, and I got into this through being given a job where my duties included researching and investigating the UFO phenomenon. And obviously through that, I became drawn into the more general question about the search for extraterrestrial life, however that search is conducted. And of course, exciting times that we're living in at the moment with all the scientific discoveries being made on this.
Yeah, so we're finding habitable planets all the time. Near this dwarf star called TRAPPIST-1, they found seven. Why is that a breakthrough for us?
Well, it's quite extraordinary, and I'm afraid I'm showing my age when I tell you that I remember the time when we didn't even know for sure that there were any other planetary systems orbiting other stars. But we've moved on a little since then. This is the first time we've actually discovered seven potential Earth-sized planets orbiting a particular star. And three of these planets are in the so-called habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone, where water may exist in liquid form. And that, of course, is where people say that if there's life, that's where it's likely to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this is still, what is it? Is it 40 light years away, right?
It is. So it's a long way, and it's way beyond our current capability. But people are thinking long-term with this. If we can't go there yet, we can certainly look at it. We have the James Webb Space Telescope scheduled for launch next year. We have a whole bunch of other people looking at the star right now. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence people are looking at it, or listening, rather, yeah, with their radio telescopes. They've had a listen already, not found anything, but they're going to have another go.
Yeah, we had Dr. Seth Shostak from SETI on last week, and he said that, you know, nothing turned up, but he said, you know, there could be reasons for that. If we look back at how far ago we started transmitting and whether things would be there yet and things like that, it would just be in the infancy of it. And you know, radio waves and television waves, they dissipate, different things like that. He thinks that didn't necessarily mean there's no chance that anything has come out of there, but it's, you know, they'd like to hear a little bit of noise to have some hope.
Sure. I think it's quite a young star compared to our own sun. And that obviously does stack the odds against life somewhat, or certainly against intelligent life. And it would be fascinating, of course, to find any extraterrestrial life. But the Holy Grail, of course, is other civilizations.
Yeah. So what's your guess on how we best find that? You know, now they're looking at dwarf stars because it's a little bit easier to make out the planets near a dwarf star, right? Is that one of the reasons why they've started looking there?
Yes, and I think the other thing is that many of the dwarf stars have an incredibly long life. So in terms of the stability that would give any planetary system and the ability of any developing life to sustain itself over eons of time, that's a likely place to look. But I think all of this is still in its infancy. We really are in early days, and that's why I think it's so exciting, because the technology that we have to look and listen for alien life today is going to be nothing compared to the technology that we have in 5, 10, 20 years'
sure.
time. And who knows what will be possible then?
What's your best guess, and what are scientists saying about the best guess on where we will find it? Would it be a star much the same age as ours, so the same amount of time is developed, or a star the same age as ours or older? Or, you know, what's the general guess on what it takes to start getting life going on other planets and other systems?
There's still a lot we don't know. And to be honest, of course, we don't really even know how life got started here. I think one of the big theories is that we should be looking for Earth-like planets orbiting Sun-like stars. But as some people have pointed out, that's a very anthropocentric view. We've only got one model, i.e. our own. It may be that life can evolve in different ways and different places. And it may be, of course, that if you're talking about an advanced civilization, that civilization may eventually migrate. I went to a conference a few years ago where somebody suggested that highly advanced technological civilizations would have such vast energy needs that they might migrate, for example, to the vicinity of a black hole to try and tap in to that energy. So maybe those are the sorts of places we should be looking. I think the honest answer is we don't know, so let's look everywhere.
Yeah. And so I've asked this whenever I have astronomers on or scientists that are looking into this. I ask, will we find evidence of life elsewhere in our lifetime? And I've gotten a lot of no answers, that they didn't think it could come in our lifetime. But you mentioned that the technology changes so fast. If you look at where we were 50 years ago versus where we are now, and you assume that things keep, you know, growing at a faster pace as they have, do you have hope? Do you think, Nick, that we will have some confirmation of life elsewhere in the universe before you and I don't exist anymore?
Yes, I'm going to go out on a limb, and to contrast with the people that have given you a no, I'm going to give you a yes. I think ours will be the generation, and I think it is the technology that's going to get us over the line, whether it's more powerful radio telescopes or indeed bigger and more capable optical telescopes. I think we'll find them. If they're out there, they should be detectable. They should be doing the sorts of things we're doing, radar systems, radio, television. And also, of course, there have been a couple of stories recently about so-called alien megastructures, the idea that an advanced civilization might construct these things, again, to tap into the energy of their home star. And if there are civilizations building those sorts of things, we really should be on the threshold of where, if they exist in our small corner of the galaxy, we'll be able to find them.
So if the theory is that life evolved on Earth over time, that it sort of spontaneously started evolving and we didn't come necessarily, so you could take religion out of it, say God created the universe and then we just came along eventually. But if we go with the theory that human beings evolved out of whatever evolved and life just sort of started on Earth, what's your guess? And if we do find life on other planets, if it would look human, you know, in all of our fantasies and our sci-fi stuff, there's a lot of these incredibly looking different creatures that are all high functioning and smart. Here on Earth, the only species that's gotten as far as it has is us, and nobody else has really come close, right? It's not like there's competing species here on Earth. I wonder, and what's your guess, if we do find life on other planets, is it going to look like something out of a movie, or might it look like you or I?
I think the answer could be all of the above. I think that it's highly unlikely, if there's other life out there, that there's just one other planet with life. And that being the case, if there is extraterrestrial life, there's probably a whole universe full of it. And that being the case, you'd expect to see some variation. Now, one really exciting possibility, and again, this sounds like science fiction, but I've heard this spoken about quite openly at mainstream scientific conferences, is the idea that we might be in a largely post-biological universe where there would be a drive towards artificial intelligence. So let's not just look for biological life, let's look for machine intelligence.
Well, that would be, you know, that really would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? Because if other planets are anything like us, they're kind of trapped on their planet still, but they would be sending probes and other machinery out into the cosmos just like we've been doing for 50 years now, right?
Yes, and the other thing is that that would get around all the objections you hear. Oh, well, they couldn't reach here from there because of the vast distances and the huge time it would take. Now, even if you accept that light speed is an absolute barrier, well, to artificial intelligence that could just put itself in a shutdown mode for millions of years, none of that would matter.
Yeah. Right, but they'd have to have come up with it millions of years ago, right? So if you and I send a probe out tomorrow, we're going to wait a long time, and our grandkids, grandkids, grandkids might still not get the answer, right?
That's right. But having said that, of course, with a universe nearly 14 billion years old, if somebody started this, somebody else out there, just a few million years ahead of us, which is a small period of time right. in a universe, 14 billion, well, they could be all over the place by now. They could be here.
And how old is Earth? How old are we estimating Earth at?
Well, about our sun is about 4.3 billion years old.
Okay.
And so, you know, we've had a while, but, right. you know, add another million here, another million there, and who knows what technology might be possible.
Pretty soon you're coming up with something. All right, well, let me ask you about Stephen Hawking. He has famously said that he, and I'm paraphrasing, and I don't mean to misquote him, but something along the lines of, it could be dangerous for us to look too hard for other life out there, because it could be dangerous to us. Do you think there's any credence to that? Do you fear at all if we come in contact with something, it could be detrimental to Earth?
He's certainly got a point. Again, we've only got one model, our own, but we look back in history and see every time a less technologically advanced civilization has encountered a more technologically advanced one, it's not ended up too well for the people with less tech. And that's Stephen Hawking's concern. He thinks it might be a rerun of the Native Americans and the European explorers, only this time we're the Native Americans. That's the way he put it. I mean, I think I've heard Seth Shostak say this. It's too late to worry about this anyway. The genie's out of the bottle. We've been a detectable civilization for decades because of our radio and television broadcasts. So there's probably not that much we can do. And you'd like to think that any civilization that has evolved to develop viable interstellar travel would have maybe gotten beyond petty territoriality and things. But who knows?
Well, we certainly haven't, and we're, you know, getting pretty technologically advanced. Although I wonder, and this is my great hope with all of this, and part of the reason why I'm so fascinated in it, Nick, is we have so many problems here on Earth and so many different factions and people fighting against each other for various reasons. And I wonder and hope, I wonder if we came in contact or were able to definitively say, yes, there is advanced intelligent life in other parts of this universe, if that would help us feel a little bit smaller about our importance and our way of doing things and trying to, you know, everybody here fighting and having wars about our ways of lives. And maybe that could bring Earth together a little bit to say, wow, we're not alone and we're not, you know, the be all end all. I don't know that that would happen, but that's my hope.
Well, I hope so, too. And I think President Ronald Reagan years ago gave a speech to the United Nations when he mused about this very possibility. And he said, I occasionally wonder how quickly we might set aside our differences down here on Earth if we ever encountered something from beyond. So I think that is an interesting thought.
And we'll just have to wait and see how that turns out. But let me ask you, so Elon Musk, I think earlier this week, said he wants to put somebody, wants space tourism to go to the moon as early as next year. Is that right? Is that what I heard?
That's right. Yes, he wants to, not to land on the moon, but do a couple of loops around it, as you say, as early as late next year. He's not the only one, of course. There are a number of other space tourism companies that are looking at everything from suborbital flights that'll give you maybe 5 minutes of weightlessness or something to some people who have said, well, no, let's try and land on the moon. I think that's going to take a little longer, but space tourism is big news at the moment.
It's big news. It's also a big expense, and a lot of companies have talked a lot about doing it and haven't gotten there yet. Of course, there's a couple of Mars programs, too. We've spoke many times with Sonja Van Meter from the Mars One program. She's one of the 100 finalists to be one of the first people to go live out the rest of her life on Mars. And so there's a lot of talk, and, you know, SpaceX and Elon Musk and these different groups are doing a lot of work in getting there. Do you think as early as next year people might be circling the moon and then coming back?
I don't see why not. We've done it already, so we know the technology exists. In fact, of course, we know the technology exists to land on the moon. So in one way, we've gone further than that already. I've seen various figures bandied around, $200,000 for a suborbital flight, maybe $70 million for a moon loop, $750 million for a landing, if anyone gets to that. But But again, we've done this. We did this back in 1969, so I don't think it should. I don't think anyone should be saying, oh, that's impossible. Well, it's history.
It's certainly not impossible. It is a bit cost prohibitive when you throw out those numbers. I don't see a lot of people. I mean, I know there's a few that got $70 million laying around, but boy, that's a price tag and a half, isn't it?
It is, but in a sense, we've already done space tourism, too. Some people have visited the International Space Station, and they've paid the Russians, in fact, to get them up there. So again, this has happened, and it's only really the next step in the space program, which is still, I guess, in terms of human history, very much in its infancy. Yeah. But again, we are going to go on with this, and the future of the space program is probably more in the hands of the private sector than in the hands of nation states these days.
We're speaking with Nick Pope. He's a retired official from the United Kingdom's Ministry of Defense and an all-around space guy. Nick, what would you like to see happen? So if you gave me, said, Matt, go ahead, you're going to run the space program for the world, what do we want to do next? And you gave me the keys of the kingdom. I would have us build something on the moon, a station like on the planet, a permanent type structure that people could actually be in, come and go more easily, and then start figuring out what we go from there. I'd like that as a little base for us, because I imagine then any further exploration into space would be a lot easier if it could start away from Earth's gravity. And I'd like us to build something there. What would you like to see the next big steps be in space exploration?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think a moon base would be the next one. And as you say, that would be the stepping stone to getting human beings on Mars. What I would like to see, though, if I could ask one thing of NASA, or indeed any of the space agencies, I would say do a star mission. And let's just pick the nearest star, Proxima Centauri, which again has been in the news quite recently because of exoplanets and the possibility of life. Let's just say we're going to go there. Obviously at this stage it's not going to be, we're not going to be sending people there, but let's do a star mission. I think that would focus the whole human race on the possibility more, because there's a lot of talk about this, but let's actually build something and go.
But it would get there when? I mean, you and I would be so dead. with the technology we have, if we send a probe to Proxima Centauri, when is it getting there?
Well, that's the problem. You can have this debate. I mean, it would take at the moment certainly tens of thousands of years. And you could say, but then you see, you get into the interesting debate. You say, well, if we wait another 20 years, we'll be able to go twice as fast. And if we wait 50 years, we'll be able to go many times as fast. And eventually, we'll be able to overtake our original probe before we get there. Yeah. But you see, the problem is, if we take that view, you'll never launch. Yeah. Because you'll always be waiting for the faster space probe. So even if it's not going to come to fruition remotely in our lifetime, I think just in terms of setting out your stall and saying, we are ambitious, we want to do this, let's go ahead. NASA has already launched, of course, four probes into interstellar space, the two Pioneers and the two Voyagers. So there is precedent for this.
It's fascinating to see where things will head and what we'll find out in our lifetime. Nick, hopefully we got 30, 40, 50 more years left to see what's going to happen. A lot can be accomplished in that time. Nick Pope, a retired official from the United Kingdom Ministry of Defense. You can find him at nickpope.net. Follow him on Twitter at nickpopemod, or follow him on Facebook at Nick Pope Official. But nickpope.net is the website where you can find all of that. Nick, it's been fascinating. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thank you.
I'm going to hold out hope for in our lifetime. I just think that would be the coolest thing, to have some sort of confirmation that there's something out there. Hello. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.